This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chuang and Chen Li. Now, the Minister for Human Resources, Datuk Sri M. Saravanan, met with Imran Ahmad, the Minister of Expatriates Welfare and Overseas Employment of Bangladesh in Dhaka yesterday to iron out details of the renewed bilateral labour agreement that was signed in December of last year.
And Bangladesh is a source country for foreign labour in Malaysia, primarily in the construction and manufacturing industries, with some 300,000 Bangladeshis currently working here, according to ministry data. And labour movements are governed by a bilateral agreement between the two countries, but this was suspended under the Pakatan Harapan government in 2018 over allegations of malpractice in the recruitment process, in particular to the high fees imposed.
Yeah, this agreement was actually renewed last year under the current government, but despite 5 months since signing the new deal, recruitment of Bangladeshi workers has not resumed. There's been over concerns that the new terms maintain the monopoly situation of the previous deal. Only 25 agencies are permitted to bring in workers, an increase from the 10 agencies previously.
So to better understand the issues at hand and how this reflects on broader foreign labour policy, we speak to Dr. Niaz Asadullah, Southeast Asia Lead at the Global Labour Organization. Good morning, Niaz. Thanks very much for speaking with us today. Could you give us some historical context? What are the problems that have beset movement of labour between Bangladesh and Malaysia that led to the suspension of recruitment back in 2018?
Thank you, Shazana. So, before I answer your question, let me again remind BFM audience that Bangladeshis make up the second largest group of migrant workers in Malaysia, particularly if you add undocumented workers. So we are talking about a key pillar of the Malaysian labor market. And for Bangladesh, Malaysia is its fourth largest source of foreign remittance. So the stakes are very high for both countries. Sadly, this also meant that vested interest groups have captured the manpower industry to profit from millions of Bangladeshi migrant workers. So back in 2016, the Malaysian government handpicked only 10 Bangladeshi agents to recruit workers. This arrangement completely overlooked hundreds of other genuine registered agencies in Bangladesh. Now, many suspect that this bilateral restriction back in 2016 was a reflection of corruption in the manpower sector and money politics. The syndicate of 10 Bangladeshi agencies imposed all sorts of hidden charges, and that too with full knowledge of law enforcing agencies. The end result was very high recruitment cost. Now, that is why the Pakatan Harapan government in 2018 suspended labor recruitment from Bangladesh.
To what extent were these problems resolved in the latest agreement signed in December 2021?
The latest MOU promises to significantly lower migration costs, at least on paper. For instance, Malaysian employers will now cover Bangladeshi workers' migration costs, such as service charge of Malaysian recruiting agency, travel to and from Malaysia, and accommodation. Employers will also pay for immigration, visa, medical tests, and insurance expenses, including COVID-19 tests. So these are big changes. On top of that, a joint working group involving officials from both countries will ensure implementation. So again, on paper it looks great, but unfortunately for many labor activists, this five-year MOU is just old wine in a new bottle. I say this because Malaysian government has once again limited manpower trade to a syndicate of 25 agencies. So there is genuine fear that despite the new MOU, malpractice and worker exploitation will not end.
And yes, bizarrely, there seems to be no uniformity between labour agreements, in Malaysia labour agreements with different countries. First of all, how does that impact Malaysia's perception as a labour destination? And I think secondly, which are the glaring discrepancies that are bear mentioning?
You're absolutely right. In a way, such variation in agreements, bilateral agreements on foreign workers by their country of origin, questions our promise and commitment to ensure decent work conditions and pay for all workers, regardless of nationalities. Think about it. why should the cost of migration be lower for workers from Nepal and Pakistan compared to those from Bangladesh? Also, we must not forget that globally, as we speak, there is an intense competition over foreign labor for post-pandemic national recovery. So it doesn't help that as our private sector tries to recover from the pandemic and employ more workers to stay in business, they have to deal with red tapeism and politics. For the past 2 years, we have been constantly in the news for the wrong reasons. Numerous global reports on poor labor standards have badly damaged Malaysia's reputation. This is perhaps one reason why last week the Indonesian government cancelled plans to send workers to Malaysia's palm oil sector.
Mm-hmm. Niaz, can I bring up an argument that was made to, I suppose, justify the limitations in recruitment agencies that are allowed to bring in workers from Bangladesh? I think the argument stated was that this is to control oversupply of foreign labor. Do you think that is a rational justification?
I don't think so, because ultimately the government of Malaysia has the power to deny visa. So they can scrutinize the applications. So they have the final say. So, you know, I think, you know, so employers and recruiting agencies should be allowed to compete and respond to market demands and supply. And that's how we have been recruiting workers from Pakistan, India, Indonesia, without having to restrict supply to a handpicked group of agencies. Mm-hmm.
And how is the foreign labor shortage impacting the broader economy? To what extent does the present shortage hinder strategies to shift away from foreign workers?
Well, you know, again, let's not forget that we are in the middle of a national labor crisis, right? Our palm oil sector alone is facing a shortage of more than 100,000 workers. And the sad news is that Malaysians have not taken up these plantation jobs, and this has badly impacted our export revenue at a time of rising palm oil prices. Similarly, I hear that manufacturers in Penang are complaining about one third of their workforce being missing. And that translates into a shortage of another 60,000 workers. But you're right that, you know, this crisis in a way is also an opportunity to permanently reduce, you know, dependence on foreign workers. One strategy is automation. But again, let's not forget that we also have a national shortage of qualified engineers who can help automate our factories. So the demand for innovation and reform are meaningless if we are only restricting access to foreign workers without addressing structural issues such as nationwide skills shortage.
Niaz, not a lot of time, that's about a minute. What is your short TLDR in terms of policy reform?
So, you know, I would single out two. So first is to harmonize labor agreements across countries and open up Malaysian market to all valid agencies. Competitive manpower industry is the best way to minimize migration costs and protect worker rights. If any private agency engages in fraudulent practices, there are provisions as per ILO's Private Employment Agencies Convention to take action. But again, I don't see any justification for country-specific recruitment syndicates. And the second one is that the government needs to adopt a more inclusive strategy instead of one-sided unilateral bans on labor movement. As we speak, government actions are not aligned with industry needs. Our Honorable Human Resources Minister claimed just last week that Malaysian employers no longer have an appetite for Bangladeshi workers. But industry leaders are saying exactly the opposite. So such conflicting claims will only reinforce speculation that our foreign labor policy has been hijacked by some vested interest groups. So the government also need to be responsible in communicating policy change and listen more to business leaders for future reforms.
Niaz, thanks very much for your comments this morning. That was Dr. Niaz Asadullah, Southeast Asia lead at the Global Labour Organization, also a professor of economics at Monash University, Malaysia, talking to us about the labour agreement between Malaysia and Bangladesh. What is stymieing implementation of this deal?
Well, the good professor mentioned two points of policy reform. I've got a third to add. How about getting rid of those agencies? I mean, the Malaysian public sector is already staffed with a lot of people. Why do we need 25 recruitment agencies of different ilk just to deal with Malaysia's labour problems?
The fact that it's limited to 25 is a big question mark, as in, if it's not applied in other labour agreements with other countries, why is this specific to the Bangladeshi agreement? I mean, I can't help but agree that there does seem to be vested interests in the works of this, something that the policymakers really need to sort out. 7:59 in the morning, we're heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. And then after that, in conjunction with World Bicycle Day, Philip C speaks to Alec Lim, CEO of Bino Technologies, on The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.